Today on Rockin' the Suburbs, we're going to take you into a state of being beyond reason and self-control.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of ready for.
It's Monday in America, and I just want to say I'd like to crack a celebratory...
Yeah. It is a great day to be an American. It really is.
It is.
It honestly is.
And you're right. And that voice you heard, folks, is that of the Bish. You may recognize him from Kiss Week. You may recognize his voice from shows past on this podcast and the previous one. And also as a good friend of mine and frequently mentioned as the drummer in Wingtip Slope, Bish. How are you doing, man?
Doing well. Such a great Monday. Feeling happy.
Good. Me too. And I'm glad that we were able to come through it together. And hopefully things will continue to trend in a more civilized way. Today, I'm excited because I should mention right here at the top, too, that my normal co-host, Jim Linehan, brains behind the show, really the man in every way, shape and form, is unable to be on the show today. I'm so glad to have the Bish here to discuss a band that has absolutely been underrepresented on Rock in the Suburbs. We have only played two XTC songs on this show, and one was on an episode about time signatures, and we played the song English Roundabout. And then we played a song way back on episode 382, The Mayor of Simpleton from Oranges and Lemons. So we have not played any songs from the album we're going to discuss today. And Bish, why don't you tell us why this topic kind of came up when we were talking about recording together?
Man, that's really embarrassing. It's really embarrassing because you know they're like one of my favorite bands.
Yeah. And, well, and I'm sure, glad you didn't let me just slip that in there smoothly.
I'm sure Mayor of Simpleton was on like your Perfect Pop, one of your Perfect Pop episodes or something, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I got to check and see. Let me see what episode 382 was.
English Roundabout's a fabulous song. That's off cool song. Of the album that came out after this album, Black Sea. Black Sea came out in mm-hmm. September of 1980, so it's 40 years old, which is, you know, every time that 40 years hits, you just shake your head and oh God, where's the time gone?
Right.
Why it's special to me is because how I learned to play the drums.
Okay.
I think that, you know, as we start talking about these tracks, I'll talk more about that. You know, I think it was a Nice Price album. You know, CBS Nice Price album. We had started listening to English Settlement was the first album I heard by XTC, and we were really into that. And then I went over to the Peaches Bargain Bin. There's a record store in Overland Park, Kansas, called Peaches, and everything were in crates and all that. It was a cool store, but they had a great cutout section, and then they had all the Nice Price albums. And I bought. You know, four or five of the earlier XTC albums at that mm-hmm. time. And I think honestly, Black Sea became my favorite album probably after the fifth or sixth listen.
And let's set the scene a little bit. In 1978, their debut White Music came out. And then, at least in my mind, kind of the classic second album syndrome where you kind of rush out that second album. Go To also came out that year. Then 1979, they came back with Drums and Wires, and then 1980 was Black Sea, English Settlement 82, Mummer 83, Big Express 84, which I guess kind of ended their, you know, kind of their classic period in one sense.
To me, and again, this goes back to Terry Chambers, the drummer, the classic period. You got those first two albums, which are real quirky. They have mm-hmm. keyboards. They have Barry Andrews was the keyboard player, and they're real quirky, spiky new wave.
Yes.
And then Dave Gregory came in, replaced Barry Anders, and they you know, instead of replacing him with another keyboard player, they brought in a guitar player, a very accomplished guitar player. Dave Gregory's fabulous. Then it became, instead of the spiky new wave, it became like a classic new wave album. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The sound is very, it's very studio-ish. The production is excellent, but it's very sanitized to me at times. Mm-hmm. And then comes Black Sea. Black Sea is when they turned the amps up to 11 and the drums got huge. And that's, a lot of that is attributed to Steve Lillywhite, but the songs were just completely, it was rock. It was total guitars in your face. For XTC it was.
Yeah, absolutely. And here was a group with two songwriters, although Andy Partridge was the dominant songwriter. It wasn't I don't think you would say it was a Lennon McCartney type relationship. I mean, maybe a little more like Townsend and Entwistle, right? I mean, Colin Moulding contributed a few songs to the albums, but here on Black Sea, he contributed one of their best known songs.
Yeah, speaking of that relationship, Partridge was his own. You know, at times he's been his own worst enemy, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He's a brilliant, brilliant lyricist. He loves to play around with song structures and the lyrics. He is brilliant, but he's kind of, you know, he's caustic. I think when Drums and Wires came out, the biggest hit off it was one of Colin Moulding's
yep.
songs. Making plans for Nigel, which,
yeah.
which I, you know, is a great song. It's not one of my favorites on the album, but it was kind of a big hit. You talk about, the differences in the songwriting. Colin's much more, relaxed and kind of straightforward, whereas Partridge's songs were jagged and much more, he was a visionary. There you go. Hey, let's listen to the first song on the album, which this first side is so perfectly sequenced. The segues mesh everything together, and this first song kicks it off, and the drums power it into, you know, it's a rocking great song. Redo the vocals to release that as a single. They had to take out they put in the word absorption instead mm-hmm. of abortion.
Okay.
Then they also had to change something about contraception or whatever, but the BBC still wouldn't play it on the single. And that was because of that line where he says Sony Entertainment Center.
Oh, okay.
And they didn't, that was part of, you know, the BBC's weirdness back in 1980. But it was such a great song and such a great way to kick off a record. Actually, you'll hear that Partridge actually likes the single, even though he had to redo it and cut out those lyrics. He likes the single version better than that. Says the mix is better and all that. So,
well, and Immaculate Reception is an extremely clever play for something that had happened.
Right. So, yeah. So that is Andrew Partridge. He falls in line with the great English songwriters that you know, viewed English society and saw all the BS that, you know, came with it and all that. His social commentary has always been just stinging and brilliant. You know, you think about Ray Davies, you think about Damon Albarn.
Yep.
You know, from Blur and all the other great songwriters. So Colin, on contrast to that, I always thought that his songs were much more personable and all that, but he didn't try to be Partridge. He didn't want to be Partridge, but he had his own style. Mm-hmm. And so we come into what's so great about this album is the sequencing and the segues that go, especially on this first side. It's so perfectly laid out. As soon as Respectable Street ends, you got a beat, and then you go right into
of the background there with just the voices in that one part is amazing. And you know, there's enough ideas in this song to, you know, make five or six songs for other bands.
Right. I think going back to, you know, Steve Lillywhite at this time, one of his early hits was Susie and the Banshees, and XTC had heard that and said, yeah, we want this guy. So he came on board for Drums and Wires, and they got along great. And then Lillywhite and Hugh Padgham, I think that's how you say his name. They were a team at the time. You know, Steve Lillywhite, you know, producer, but Hugh Padgham was the engineer, and he's the one who helped craft that sound. And at that same time, they were also in this 1980, they had just done either their first or second albums with Peter Gabriel. Mm-hmm. So they had done Peter Gabriel 3, and they were doing, they had just done Boy, I think, at the time, you know, and they did Boy, October, and War.
Yeah.
The classic U2 albums. I don't think Black Sea would have been what it was without those two guys.
Yeah.
So.
Well said. There is a drum hook in this song that reminds me very much of your playing. And so when, you know, when you say you learned to kind of play, for those regular listeners to the podcast, the Bish and I play in a rock, indie rock trio. And oftentimes, you know, we use each instrument to kind of accent certain parts. And there's definitely that one drum break in there, like, bah, 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 that's very much, you know, like something you would throw into a song that we create.
Yes, totally. Totally. Like I said, this is the album that I learned to play drums on. And I've probably listened to this album, I don't know, 500 times, maybe. I didn't have to go back and listen to it to refresh. You know, we decided we were going to do this a couple of days ago. I didn't have to go back. It's ingrained in my brain. And so Terry Chambers, these songs, the drumming is kind of like, it's kind of like a training guide. This isn't like Impossible Beats. This is not a John Bonham. This is not a Keith Moon Phil Fest, you know.
Yep.
The drums really complement the songs and all that. And he does, in each song, he's very creative about what he's doing. He's not over drumming. The sound, you know, is bringing that drum to the forefront. But yeah, mm-hmm. It's such a great workout. The first side, the whole album, playing it because, you know, they're playing quick. It is punk music.
Absolutely.
It's different. Mm-hmm. It's different beats, different polyrhythms.
Let's listen to the next song. I find it very interesting for a couple of different reasons. And here we go. So I got to talk to you about this, Bish. That, to me, when you first hear this song, is a Brian Eno song or a Brian Eno tribute, right? It sounds like one of the early Brian Eno records, the beginning of this song, Living Through Another Cuba. Now, I know it kind of goes into something different, but man, it sounds like Baby's on Fire or Driving Me Backwards or one of those early Eno tunes with that ambiance and that kind of drive to it and that weird off-kilter pop sound.
So
do you hear that? Because I really think when I listened to this today again for the first time in a while, I was like, wow, these guys were into Eno. Like, I totally get it. And I don't think I ever did. Yeah, I don't think I ever really dawned on me that quickly.
It's kind of amazing that that he never produced them back then or whatever. Yeah. But yeah, there was like 5 minutes where at some point, I guess this was after Barry Andrews left, there was like 5 minutes where it looked like Eno, just 5 minutes, where Eno was going to join the band.
No way. Really? Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That would have been so cool.
Because that would have been probably a match made in hell.
I would imagine.
But,
yeah.
But it's kind of amazing that he never did that. I didn't hear any of the classic Eno stuff until I met you in the late 80s and all that. And I'd been mm-hmm. in XTC for 8-9 years. And
yeah.
I never thought that. That's quite an observation. But now that you say that, I'm like, oh yeah, maybe.
Yeah, that's what really jumped out at me today when I played this record, as I said, for the first time in a while. But man, that's a great song. And then again, the lyrical content is so sly and so shrewd and so smart. I mean, you know, to understand history and context like that and put it together is amazing. It really is.
Yeah, we are piggy in the middle talking about
genius. Yeah. Bay of Pigs, man. So good.
So
okay. So so we're up to song 4. Now, this is a value for your money album, right, Bish? I mean, there's what are we talking about here? 14 songs total? Is that right?
Or maybe not. Like that?
Let me check. I'm checking my vinyl copy here. The last song is Travels. Yeah. So that actually there's 11 songs. I'm sorry. I'm looking at a couple of extras.
Yeah,
I guess.
You're looking at so like the CD's got a couple. Got B-sides.
Yeah, there's 3 tacked onto it. Yep.
So so the next song,
Love at First Sight.
Another Collins song. And and this is so great. This is again so great. Another different drum beat to learn, but yet it's kind of a breather after Living Through Another Cuba, because even though that's a, you know, ska rhythm, whatever you want to call it, it's a workout, and then you kind of get something relaxing here. So what was great about XTC at the time is that they were still a touring band, and they got these two guitar players now. And when Partridge wrote a song, what was important to them at the time is that they had to go out and present these songs live and make them sound like they did on the record.
Right.
And so when you got to a Collins song, you got a lot of interplay between the two guitars, and you really hear it there. And that was because Partridge didn't need to worry about singing and all, you know, Colin singing. And so he and Gregory could go, you know, show their chops. I think that there is somewhere, there's a list of, you know, and I hate Rolling Stone, but they have a list of the greatest guitar players of all time. And once you get into the list beyond 100, you'll see both of them listed together, you know, and it's actually a pretty astute, I think, comparison. I think Dave Gregory is an amazing guitar player and all, but them together, you know, they were able to play off each other, the yin and the yang, you know. If you go and look up any YouTube videos for live XTC stuff, which is, you know, for 1980 and before, you will see that Partridge is a maniac on stage. Yeah. I mean, he really was quite a showman. So it's kind of weird that he, you know, he got to this point where he had stage fright.
Yeah,
because he was crazy. If you ever seen the movie The Music War, which is really cool. I think he kind of he kind of sets the standard for that movie and the great presence that they have. So,
yeah, an amazing band. You know, just it, yeah, totally. And I think people should take the Vicious Advice there and look that stuff up. I mean, they had just as much intensity as the Jam, you know, in a very intense live band. They really did have all that coiled energy. So, kind of amazing story. It really is. And, man, I'm glad we're getting this XTC in before we hit 1,000, because it'd be really bad on us if we hadn't focused on them. Let's hear a little bit of the fifth song on side one of Black Sea. It's a brilliant love song. It really is.
Yeah, and you know, Partridge, you know, he's not shy about trying to you know, talking about things.
Yep.
You know, I guess we'll stop there.
Well, in a long-standing rock and roll tradition, yeah.
right, exactly. And so that song. There, you're right back into it. That's a hell of a drummer's workout.
Oh my God, there. You're not kidding. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, so, you know, but you had, it was a perfect segue into that. And then the next song, I think, is one of those, again, it's another Partridge song where he does a lot of playing with the lyrics and all. It's called No Language in Our Lungs, right?
Right. Yep.
And he's got the great line. I wanted this to be an instrumental, but the words got in the way.
Yeah.
And just playful stuff like that. I'm not sure that, you know, you think about Ray Davies being doing that, those playful, you know, lyrics back and forth. I'm not sure that there's too many other English bands that. Or English songwriters that were able to do that. And you know me.
Yeah.
I'm a music first guy. Lyrics are kind of secondary and all that, but you have to love Partridge's lyrics.
Yeah.
Because they are so creative and they're so intertwined. The way he is crafting them and the way he's putting into the music, it was his own style too.
Right. Absolutely. And, this is one of my all-time favorite song titles ever made, man. It's such a cool song title. And when you think about the human voice and, you know, there's no language in our lungs. So not only can I not make a sound, but I can't even communicate correctly. It's kind of amazing. And yeah, I totally agree. I mean, up there with, you know, Different Until Brooke. Who had incredible turns of phrase and Ray Davies. Yeah. Those guys are all in a very high class.
None of those bands could have existed in America. You know, you talk about Squeeze, you talk about XTC.
Yep.
You talk, you talk about Weller and the Jam, the lyrics, what was coming out of England in the late 70s and the social awareness, the political awareness, mm-hmm. it wasn't happening. And To the extent, I should say. I mean, you could always make arguments of that. I mean, look at you know, Wire. I mean,
And I think, you know, many of the socioeconomic conditions that, you know, fed into the explosion of punk were very present in those things you just stated. And also, and so that's it. I mean, that's the song that closes the first side of the record. There is no language in our lungs to tell the world just how we feel. No, 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 no bridge of thoughts. No mental link. No letting out just what to think. There is no language in our lungs, 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 lungs. There is no muscle in our tongues to tell the world what's in our hearts. No, 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 we're leaving nothing behind. Just chiseled stone.
It's the sequencing, the drums. It's why it's my favorite record. It has been for 38 years now.
It's amazing, amazing.
So yeah, I have to say this too.
Mm-hmm.
Back about 30 years ago, I was really looking to put together an XTC cover band, and then I got roped into something completely different.
Is that a true story?
No, but I would have loved to have been an XTC cover band or an REM cover band, you know.
Oh, man. Well, you would have had to find a lot better guitar player than me at that point to do it. Even today, I don't think I can handle half of this stuff. Yeah, you were definitely tricked. So we're going to take a break here. The Bish and I probably go get ourselves another cold brew and continue our Monday celebration. And then what we're going to do, Bish, is flip the album, and we're going to listen to side two tomorrow. So appreciate you coming up with this idea. It's fantastic. Long overdue to address XTC. And so if anyone has thoughts on XTC, you can get in touch with us. The best way probably to do it is find us at SuburbsPod on the socials, or just go to SuburbsPod.com, and all the contact info is there. And if there are other bands that you feel like we should have addressed and haven't given due time to, and don't anybody dare say Genesis, or I'll get upset because we have given them their fair due. And just want to thank you, the Bish, for joining. And you're going to stick around, right, tomorrow, and we'll
right
listen
on
to side two. All right. This is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Patrick Foster. Thank you, Bish, and we'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Hehehehe